I'm Savannah.
I'm Rachel.
And this is
That's What She Said. In season 2, episode 9, Email Surveillance, at around 15 minutes and 30 seconds, Jim tells the cameras,
"It's true. I'm having a party. I've got 3 cases of imported beer, a karaoke machine, and I didn't invite Michael. So 3 ingredients for a great party." Howdy.
Welcome back.
It's been a while. I feel like we say that every time, but it has been a while.
Yeah. We're busy people.
I know. I feel like spring, like, I always imagine easing into it, but spring is always crazy for no reason. Like, social plans, it's getting warm outside, so, like, people want to do more stuff. Stuff is opening up for, like, the summer season, and it's just, like, chaotic.
It hits hard.
Yeah.
But you just want to be outside more.
And the days are longer, and the weather is warmer, and it's just, yeah.
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 I agree. Anything big that happened this past week or two for you?
Well, I have a new job.
Yes.
That I love.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. So I'm now into event planning and catering, which is what I've always wanted to do. I've done a lot of it, like, in my past jobs and stuff, and that's what I really like to do. So it feels good. Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would say that's my Dundee, is, like, my new job and settling into that. But what about you?
What about me? I saw the movie Sinners.
Okay, I've heard about this, but I don't know much about it.
So good.
Is it in theaters?
It's in theaters. Highly recommend. It's a good movie to see in theaters. It is labeled, I think it's horror, like it's rated R.
Oh.
However, for me, it was not, like, there's some jump scares and this and that, but it wasn't like I was about to run out of the theater.
Yeah.
Like, it was the storytelling was very well done, a lot of really good music and metaphor. I was more interested in the plot than it was, like, horror gore the whole time.
Okay.
It was beautiful. Highly recommend.
Okay.
Set in the 1930s in Mississippi.
Ooh.
It's, like, Michael B. Jordan's in it. Hailee Steinfeld.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah. A lot of big names. And the music is beautiful. So I won't say too much.
Okay.
But highly recommend if you're on the fence. It really has like a 98% or something on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's done very well.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just a beautiful piece of artwork. So.
Okay. Well, I'll have to grab a tub of popcorn and go see that.
Yes. Or two.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, I've got a few things to share from the Office Bible today. I found a section that kind of talks about the, like, scripting of the show. There is a big misconception that The Office was largely improvised, but mm-hmm. in the book, John Krasinski says, "People always ask me, oh man, how much of The Office was improvised? And I go, 90% of the time, it was exactly what the writers wrote. Nobody ever believes me." John Krasinski said that. And then one of the writers says that it's 98% scripted. So I feel like that kind of, I don't know, speaks to the delivery of a lot of the content, especially with, like, Michael Scott. I feel like Steve Carell just delivers stuff in a way that seems so offhanded and, like...
And that's a credit, like you said, to the actors and the writers for writing scripts that feel so natural and real that people think they're improvised.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure there are some of those moments, but that's interesting that they said, like, 90 or above percent was scripted.
Yes. And Oscar Nunez, who plays Oscar on the show, says the whole thing was scripted. And then after a couple of takes using the script, if people wanted to improvise, they would. The leads would improvise more than we would, but we would also improvise. Some of the lines got in, but for the most part, it's a scripted show.
Hmm.
And then describing the show as a whole, one of the writers called it a tofu hot dog.
Explain.
It says here, the show is a tofu hot dog. It's good food disguised as junk food. In other words, we took something and rewrapped it in a different type of veneer that sells it. And Greg Daniels, like, all right, so you've got the job. That was all from the tofu hot dog. I don't know. It's kind of a vague description, but I kind of understand what they're saying, I guess. Like, it's like kind of like junk TV in a way, but there's, like, really good pockets of lessons and, like, relatability to it.
It also seems like the foundation, again, was a script, right? They had a vision. It wasn't off the cuff, but it's all built to look like that.
Right.
So it's, right, that's the, you know, that's the tofu part. That's the meat, the fake meat part.
Right.
And then the hot dog is, like, the part that looks like it's whatever. It's like an off the cuff, like riffing show.
Yes.
But it's not. Like there was a lot built up
yes,
to it. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So
we
I
made that work.
I
tofu
loved
hot
that.
Dog.
I loved that. And then there was a part where Steve Carell talks about Michael, just since like a lot of the episodes we've been talking about are kind of Michael centric as they tend to be. But he says, I think Michael is a man who clearly lacks self-awareness. I always said if he caught a glimpse of who he really is, his head would explode. Which I think is so true.
That's great.
Because I think on the inside, Michael Scott thinks he's this like suave, like, I don't know.
Yeah, he thinks he's really smooth.
Yeah, yeah. Intelligent businessman. But he's just such a clown. And if he really saw that for himself, I feel like he would totally
yeah.
explode.
Isn't that the point, right? He's a joker and he doesn't
yes.
know it.
Yes.
I love those. Thank you for sharing.
Of course.
I would like to get into some beat or bear so we can get into the meat of this, the tofu hot dog of
yeah.
this episode.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So Savannah, are you ready to play beat or bear?
I'm ready.
Number one, it is the email surveillance episode. So the first plot mm-hmm. point, email surveillance at work.
Yes. I'm going to say a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Just because.
Big brother.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Get out of my head.
Okay. Number two, the camera crew involvement in Pam's investigation in this episode.
I'm going to say beat, I guess, just because we don't get a lot of that normally.
Mm-hmm.
They're not usually too involved aside from filming, you know.
I think this is the first time. I mean, they don't speak to her, but she speaks to them
right.
and they like nod the camera
mm-hmm.
or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the first time it happened. So that's
yeah.
probably a beat for me, too.
Yeah.
How about Jim's barbecue? All his coworkers are invited, but no boss.
I'm going to say beat because that's relatable. I would want my work friends there, but to have my boss there, I feel like would make everyone feel uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like it would feel like we're at work, and I feel like everyone would feel the need to like censor themselves.
Jim
quite a
agrees
bit. You know
with
what I
you.
Mean?
Yeah. Yep. Okay, beat or bear Michael's improv class, which we get a nice look into this episode.
This is a stick up. I have a gun. I want to say beat because I like that he has an activity much like Dwight with his karate.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
We love a man with a hobby.
Yeah. And I mean, I hate that he has to end up like killing everyone in every scene that he improvises, but
we'll get into it.
On
but
the
Michael's
whole,
idea of improv is very structured into one narrative, which defeats the purpose of improv.
Correct. So I'm just going to say beat for the sake of it being an
okay.
extracurricular.
And you know what? Michael in an improv class is what we've been waiting to see
that
because that's
true.
How he treats work.
That
so
is true.
I like that. Okay. Last but not least, the karaoke at Jim's barbecue.
Mm.
Do you like karaoke at a barbecue?
Karaoke really gives me anxiety.
Oh!
Personally. But in this context, watching it from the outside, I'm going to say a bear.
Okay.
Actually, just because I don't really like karaoke that much.
Fair.
And Michael makes everyone uncomfortable by singing a duet by himself. The male and female parts.
Valid. All right, thanks for playing. So we'll get into the plot summary next.
All right, so let's get into email surveillance.
This episode comes in hot. So it starts with a new IT guy
uh-huh.
coming into the office.
Uh-huh. Unfortunately.
Well... We see him coming in from the parking lot.
And unfortunately, because Michael is so ignorant,
he gets nervous and locks all the doors because the new IT guy wears a turban.
Correct.
So
yes.
The opening scene is pretty rough. Michael, like, locks the door,
turns off
the
lights.
Kevin's like, are we in danger? Do I
He's
need
like,
to call the
shut
police?
Up, shut up.
And Michael's like, okay, everyone, there's no time to think about if this is real or not.
Oh, God.
So it's a pretty rough cold open for this one. But turns out this new IT guy is here because he's installing email surveillance
mm-hmm.
on all the Dunder Mifflin servers.
Mm-hmm. So basically, he's in Michael's office working on the computer, and Michael is like hovering over his shoulder while he's like setting this up, and they're filtering through like emails in the office, because now you can like see everything because of the surveillance. And Michael, of course, wants to know what everyone is saying about him. So he's like, search Michael Scott, search like best boss ever, or like just stupid shit like
world's
that.
World's best boss.
Yeah, yeah.
So as Michael's in his office with the IT guy, having uncomfortable conversations about this man's turban, because it's Michael Scott, everyone sort of is on edge in the office, I think, because they know the IT guy is in there. Mm-hmm. And so when Michael comes out and shuts the door and leaves the IT guy in his office, Dwight is very concerned. He's like, why is he here? What's going on?
Right.
And at a certain point, the employees ask Michael, what's the deal? Like, why are you spying on our computers? And Michael says, that, like, oh, Oscar's gone crazy, everyone. Like, why do you think this is happening? And lo and behold, an email had gone out telling them
about the surveillance.
Yep. So while Michael, you know, thought he was going to be sneaky about it, it defeats the purpose, tells everyone we're starting email surveillance. Mm-hmm. So then we go through some talking heads of reactions.
Well, Kevin has to erase a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff. Like, is he looking at porn on his work computer? I don't understand that.
Or is he just watching mermaids?
Oh, good call. Good call. Time wasting. Oscar has a side job of doing people's taxes. Mm-hmm. So he's a little nervous about that.
And Dwight tells Angela to delete sensitive emails. Very curious.
Very curious. So Michael is having himself a day. Now that the IT guys left, he got them all set up. Mm-hmm. Michael can just go through people's emails.
Mm-hmm. He's excited. I mean, I can understand. That would be like a lot of tea to unpack.
Yes.
Also feels a little like wrong in a way, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, I understand it's like a double-edged sword. Like, you should be working on your work computer, on your work email. You know, so like I understand both sides. Yeah, for sure.
So he does end up finding out through an evite that mm-hmm. Jim is having a barbecue.
Where's my evitation?
So it goes to everyone in the office except for Michael. But of course, through this email surveillance, Michael finds out. So he is now on a mission to position himself as one of the guys.
And to be invited to this barbecue.
His goal in life.
Yes. Michael tries to weasel his way into this party.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So the first one is in the break room during lunch, mm-hmm. right? So he once again has had Ryan run an errand to buy him a nice meal.
Classic.
And when sushi. Ryan, yes, when Ryan shows up with the meal, Michael has already started digging into a cup of noodles and tells him to go put it in the fridge or throw it away or something. Like, just throw the sushi away.
I don't want it.
And he's eating this cup of noodles instead because he's like, I used to live on this stuff in college. And then he goes into this whole spiel about how he used to go to parties in college. And the professors were there, too. They were the most fun.
The professors would go to the parties. So it's very obvious. And I think it's obvious to people, even if they don't know that, like, Michael read that evite.
Right.
He's trying to position himself as being one of the crew.
Yep.
And even he has some talking heads where he says, like, I'm just a worker bee, you know, like, they, you know, people are really intimidated by me, mm-hmm. right? Like, they're afraid if they spill something on me at a party, like,
right.
I'm going to dock their pay.
Right.
Meanwhile, it's just that no one likes hanging out with him.
Correct. Correct.
So as everyone's filing out of the office, he's also asking, like, what are you doing tonight?
Yes, trying to get, you know,
got
a list
plans?
Of everyone's plans. And they're all kind of like fibbing and just saying that they're busy or they have to go run errands or they have this and that to do. So he's trying to get a doc of everyone's plans and figure out what's going on and trying to get someone to spill the beans about the party so that he can go too. But everyone's pretty tight-lipped about it, and they know that Michael's not invited purposefully.
Well, and the one outlier being Dwight, who, you know, starts asking Jim about the party, and Jim says, keep your voice down, like, not everyone's invited.
Yes.
And reveals to Dwight that tonight's actually a surprise party for Michael. It's not.
Right. Right. It's just so that Dwight won't tell Michael about it, which also kind of surprised that he invited Dwight. Also, now that I'm thinking about it, like, I'm surprised that he didn't exclude both of them. but also I think his roommate wanted to see that Dwight was a real person.
Real. He didn't believe him. Yeah. That's a good point. So as this is all going on with Michael in the office, there's also another thing happening central to the plot, which is that earlier Dwight told Angela to delete any sensitive emails she has. Pam overhears this and she's like, what?
She has suspicions.
She has suspicions. And so she enlists both Jim and the camera crew and says, if you guys see anything, let me know.
Oh, and also Pam did see that Angela got two Baby Ruth candy bars from the vending machine and then later saw that Dwight was eating one of them.
Yes.
So that was also a link that she saw.
She also tries to ask Dwight, like, oh, my friend is trying to decide between these two girls. Like, one is blonde and short and the other one, you know. And so she's trying to gauge Dwight's interest. And Dwight's question says, well, does he have access to their medical records? So no information revealed there besides that Dwight's a weirdo, which we knew.
We already knew that.
So this investigation is ongoing. Okay, let's cut to Jim's barbecue.
Yes, later that evening. So we've got pretty much everyone in the office there. Some people even brought dates, like Stanley brought Terry.
That might be it.
I guess that is it. However, Pam did not bring Roy because he had other plans, which Jim was low-key stoked about. I think you could tell.
Yeah, Roy was playing poker.
Yeah. And, so it's just Pam there, but...
So Jim's roommate really wants to meet Dwight because he thinks that Dwight is made up. And Dwight, we notice, is wearing his party Birkenstocks, which he keeps in the car for special occasions.
They have the strap on the back for off-roading.
Classic. So everyone's mingling, having a good time. We do learn that Ryan wants to call Katie. Do you remember Katie?
Purse girl. And Body bag Barbie.
And Jim says he hasn't talked to her in a while. So Ryan's like, hey, can I get in there?
So Jim ends up giving everyone a tour of his McMansion, which basically looks like the inside of a frat house or dorm room. It's got like the Christmas lights on the crown molding. It's got like wacky posters and pictures everywhere. Yeah. It just looks like dudes live there for sure.
Yeah, they do. Jim and his roommate.
So they end up in Jim's bedroom and they're like looking around and Pam stays behind and is like wandering around in his room and he comes back. He's like, oh, I thought we lost someone. And she's like sitting on his bed looking through his yearbook and
she gets very happy looking at a high school yearbook photo of Jim.
Yes.
So they have some cute intimate moments.
Correct. Squee moments. In the bedroom. Yes.
So Pam is still on her investigation here. Mm-hmm. So Angela and Dwight both at this party, the cameras do pick them up talking at a certain point. And Pam looks at the camera, walks over to Phyllis. So the camera's kind of following her and says, Phyllis, have you heard anything about any secret office romances?
Mm. And Phyllis thinks she's talking about Pam and Jim.
Ooh.
Which is the more obvious one, obviously, because they made out in Chili's, kissed in Chili's.
And they flirt all the time. And so Pam is very upset by this.
And shocked. Which, like, how can you be shocked by that?
And Phyllis feels bad. But she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I thought you guys... So, obviously, Pam is a bit flustered by this. She thus decides to drop the investigation. When Jim asks her about her project, she's like, no, I gave that up. Like, there was nothing there. Because she's all self-conscious about her relationship with Jim.
Which, like... There have been so many other things that have happened along the way to get to this point where she should have... like put that together.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like she's very like just a little too ignorant at this point for me of how it appears.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
But anyway, okay. So Jim's barbecue going great. We're doing the little Angela Dwight dance, Pam Jim dance. We're trying to talk about things other than paper at the barbecue.
Yeah.
Now we're going to switch to see what Michael Scott is up to on this night where he did not get invited to the barbecue. What is he doing, Savannah?
So he did end up having some plans. He went to an improv class. So in this improv class, I believe it's at the community college, right? Or something.
Some school, maybe high school.
High school even. So it's like a bunch of young adults at this improv class in this classroom. And unfortunately, in every situation that the teacher poses or that is yes-anded, Michael's improv character has to conceal or pull out a gun and shoot everyone in the situation because you can't get any better than that, or you can't go anywhere with that or something like that.
He says it's the most exciting thing that could happen in a scene.
Like, what?
And so he is always, his character is always Agent Michael Skarn of the FBI.
Oh my God.
Which, if you're familiar with Threat Level Midnight, his screenplay, that Correct. Is the main character.
Correct.
So this is always, he's always Detective Michael Skarn. Every scene they're improvising, Michael is this agent, right? So it's really just crushing the vibe. He's super sweaty and his pits are very stained. He's like overly enthusiastic. He's always raising his hand. However, no one wants to partner with him.
Because he's obnoxious and ruins every scene.
Everyone's annoyed. The teacher's annoyed. Michael throws out suggestions. He like can't stop himself.
It's so bad.
It's really embarrassing and sad because he's clearly the same at work as he is out of work. Well-meaning, right? He just wants to be loved and engaged and wants to feel cool.
And wants to help.
And everyone is so annoyed
it's
by him.
It's giving Mr. Brown on Diversity Day.
Mr. Like... Brown. Yeah, exactly. Nobody wants to partner with him. And he talks to the cameras and says, no one wants to fight the heavyweight champion.
Yes.
Like, basically, again, same thing where he's like, well, I'm too cool. That's the problem.
Right.
I'm too authoritative. Right.
And he thinks he's doing a great job. But really, he's just annoying everyone and ruining yes. it for everybody.
Yeah. So that's like, you kind of feel for him, right? At his improv class, everyone leaves. They're all obviously going for a drink, but they tell Michael, right. oh, no, we're not going together.
We just are meeting a friend that somehow all knows us through random connections. Yeah. It's like a private birthday thing.
Yeah. So, and Michael says, okay, no worries, guys. Like, I got a big office party to go to.
Yeah.
The aforementioned office party he was not invited to.
Correct. Correct. He somehow got Jim's address from maybe the evitation,
I guess.
And he decides to show up to this party that he was not invited to.
So Jim's barbecue is going great when we cut back. Kevin, Phyllis, people are crushing karaoke. People are interacting, having fun. Jim gives a little to the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And when Michael walks in, it all grinds to a halt.
Well, first off, he sees that the brand new IT guy was invited to this party because he's there.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael's like, oh, come on, that guy? Really? Really? And he mentions how he's like, what does he say? He's a good guy.
He said, well, because he realizes how his reaction could be perceived. Yeah. He goes, he is a good guy. He is not a terrorist.
So, which, mind you, Michael also put on his own turban in front of this man earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
Like, it's a messy situation.
Yes. So Dwight's all excited. He's like, surprise. And everyone's like, what? Like, Dwight, like, this is not a surprise party for Michael. Michael's like, oh, here's some wine. Take my jacket, temp. He's immediately making everybody uncomfortable, which was why Jim didn't invite him.
Yes, correct.
And he's like, I would love a glass. If you're opening that wine, I get next song on karaoke. He calls it out.
It's just so embarrassing.
It is. It should be. It should be a little, but he does not feel embarrassed.
I think this is one of the situations that Steve Carell was talking about, where like if Michael really saw it from like an outside perspective, his head would explode.
Yes.
Michael decides to join in on the karaoke.
Yes.
He chose a male-female duet to sing.
He does.
And so he starts singing, thinking that someone's going to jump up and join him, and no one really does, until he's like 3/4 of the way through the song, and Jim finally jumps
takes
in.
Pity.
Because it's pitiful, literally pitiful and pathetic.
He's singing in like a falsetto. It's sad. It's sad. So good for Jim. He stands up and takes one for the team and says, all right, this guy showed up uninvited to my party. He's so desperate.
Right.
So it ends with that. It ends with Jim standing up, singing with Michael. Mm-hmm. And there is one more shot that Savannah needs to tell us, because I know she's cringing right now. Yes.
So while that's going on, everyone is distracted by Michael's horrendous karaoke. There is, I guess we never explained it, but there is a pink playhouse in Jim's backyard that is owned by the owners mm-hmm. who he rents from. And while this karaoke is going on, there are two pairs of little Birkenstocks rubbing together in there.
It's Birkenstocks and like the plaid clogs.
Like the Birkenstocky looking clogs. And it's Dwight and Angela. Mm-hmm. And they are playing in the playhouse, if you will.
They are playing. So ultimately, Pam's suspicions were correct, confirmed, but she doesn't actually know because she gave up the project. Right. So the camera crew just captures that shot.
It's so crazy because Dwight and Angela, like, presumably have been doing this throughout the whole second season.
Right.
So I don't know, like, comparatively to like Jim and Pam, who are so outwardly flirtatious from the beginning. Stuff. Yeah. I guess Dwight and Angela are just much more like reserved and private people in general, like even individually, I feel like. But
right.
It's just like they're literally fucking in the backyard and you guys aren't even, you don't even know.
Yeah. That's kind of crazy to me.
I know.
Trivia time.
Trivia.
So, the first piece of trivia I have for you. Mm-hmm. The date on the email for the party, the invitation, is November 5th, 2005, okay. which was a Saturday.
Oh.
So, this episode takes place on a Friday. So, it was either an error, right? Or they just took liberty with the date. Oh,
interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's like, if it was a different date. Or day of the week when they filmed it. Like, you know what I mean? Because it's like, they probably filmed it a year apart from the airing or something, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Or they just decided they didn't care. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So in this episode, Michael is obsessed with pulling a gun during scenes in his improv class.
He is.
Steve Carell says that this was inspired by a former student who, in his own improv days, always used to pull a gun during scenes.
No way.
Based on a real person.
Oh, wait. That actually makes it way funnier.
I agree. Also, I can't imagine that being real. Like, that's so
That would be
difficult.
So frustrating.
Yes.
Especially as an adult. Like, doing that in your free time after work, and this one person
keeps
is just screwing it up.
Yes, yes.
That's funny. When Jim and Pam are speaking in Jim's room at the barbecue, there's some random stuff on his desk. There's, like, a Dunder Mifflin book. Mm-hmm. And there's also the video game Call of Duty, mm-hmm. which comes up a lot in this show, I guess.
It does.
For Jim, for that age group at the time, maybe.
Yeah.
So Toby later is playing a video game, and it looks like Call of Duty. So
okay,
so maybe that is like the game he's putting out for his guests to play. I don't know. It's very weird.
It's very
weird.
Not a very like violent game.
Yeah, it's like a World War II. Yeah, you're like shooting people.
Oh geez. Okay, in Jim's apartment there is a doll which bears remnants to Roy wearing a Dunder Mifflin uniform.
Bears what?
Bears a resemblance to Roy wearing a Dunder Mifflin uniform. I find that weird.
I also find that weird. Do you think it was intentional or
I don't maybe it's, just... maybe it's a voodoo doll. For real. You know, maybe he was asking Pam if Roy was coming so he would know if he had to hide his doll or not.
But he didn't.
Because Roy wasn't there.
Oh my gosh.
Roy would have been like, hey man, is that me?
That's creepy. Also having like just work related, I don't know, maybe if you're really into your job, but like
a doll?
Like my home space is my home space.
Right. And also like the warehouse uniform is very specific.
You're right.
No, it's not like it was a doll of Jim himself because he doesn't wear the...
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
So on a lighter note, when Angela buys the Baby Ruth candy bar, you can see in the vending machine, like, a lot of the candy bars are turned around.
Oh, the brand names. Oh.
So there's, like, there might be a fake one in there, too.
Yeah.
But then it's, like, only the one or two maybe brand names are probably the ones they had.
Interesting.
The ability to show.
To use, yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. Let's see. So in Jim's room, there is a guitar on the other side of the bed. In a later episode that we will one day cover, Jim makes an avatar for a game called Second Life that has a guitar on his back. Pam asks if Jim really does play the guitar, but he denies it at that time in
You're
the future.
Right.
So he lied to her. He probably because she would probably ask him to play for her.
Or
maybe he didn't want to play.
Is he just one where he just has a guitar and he doesn't play
it? Yeah. Because
I feel like that happens pretty often.
For
sure. Oh, yeah, I meant to pick that up and just never got to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Too busy playing with my voodoo dolls.
Stop.
Okay, one little amusing thing I found was that in the beginning where Michael is meant to set up the email surveillance by himself, I guess, but he calls the IT guy for help.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, yeah, like, you guys have these things, so password protected. Mm. And the IT guy's like, just answer, like, put in your password. And Michael doesn't know his password, but it's on a sticky note next to his computer.
1, 2, 3, 4.
So he really didn't need the IT guy in the first place.
Oh, my God. Classic.
Classic Michael.
So when Michael is eating the cup of noodles on his break, he mentions how it was brain food in college and how they would always invite the professors to the parties. However, a few episodes earlier in The Fire, it is stated that Michael never went to college.
You're right.
So he lied about that.
He was really just making, he was improvising.
Improvising. And also, that's probably why he said the professors would go to the parties, because he never actually went, and that
he
isn't a thing.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I love that one.
So, Jim's yearbook photo is actually John Krasinski's real life yearbook picture.
Cute.
Love that. During one of the improv scenes, Michael mispronounced the name of Michael Scorn by saying Michael Scorn.
Michael Scorn.
Michael Scorn. In Jim's apartment, at the bottom of the stairs, there is a poster in a black frame with the illustration of a man. And at the bottom of the poster, it says Cycles Favor Motor. Shortly after, when Jim and Pam are in his bedroom, we see the same exact poster on his bedroom wall.
Ooh, so they used it for both.
Yeah.
So when Michael arrives at the party, mm-hmm. Kevin's singing karaoke.
Mm.
The line that he's singing is, just turn around now because you're not welcome anymore.
Ooh.
As Michael's walking into the
Symbolic.
Party.
Symbolic. I love that. Yep. I love that. Speaking of Kevin, a close-up of Kevin's computer in a deleted scene shows that he is deleting 13,038 files, including When Harry Met Sally, and that's Harry, H-A-I-R-Y, 2+1=Crazy Love, and many files whose titles are combinations of the phrases Night Of, Hot Heat Of, Naughty, Crazy, Lovin', Nurse, Babysitter, and Monkey.
So he is watching porn. Kevin.
Oh,
Kevin,
God.
Kevin, Kevin.
Classic Kevin.
Classic Kevin. Oh, my goodness. All right, let's move on to Cole Walks and Dundies.
Let's do it. All right, we're throwing the coals on, and we're about to walk over some hot steam.
Yep. Give it to me. What's your cool walk for this episode?
Okay, mine has to do with the improv situation, the improv class, where Michael has to pull out a gun on everyone and ruin the scenes. So, in my opinion, I feel like there are many ways that you could flip the script or divert the situation.
Hmm.
When Michael does this.
If you're a fellow improv player.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you, like, call 911 or, like, try to fight the gunman?
Or be like, I'm actually a secret agent, too.
Right. Like, I have two guns.
Yeah.
Now what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So, like, why was everyone's immediate...
That's, like, interesting.
Why were they all immediately just, like, hands up, you know, forfeiting?
Well, and even in that scene where Bill, Ken Jeong, who's
yes.
in Community and
The Hangover,
yeah. Michael, after his guns have been taken away, right?
Yeah.
He whispers in his ear something, and then Ken puts his hands up in the air.
Right.
He's like, he says he has a gun, but he can't show it to me.
Yes.
But you're right. Like, why... I guess why? They're just, you know what? They're just so defeated from their work days. And this is where they go to release. And then this man is like, they're constantly.
We can't put up with this dude.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, a good one, though. That's like, a good question.
Yeah. Like, if since Michael whispered it to Bill, yeah. Why wouldn't Bill just like not say anything and then have his character do something to fight the gunman or to like respond like, in some way?
Yes. And
exactly. Exactly.
But I guess they don't. I guess everyone's just so fed up with Michael.
I'm sure, like, in maybe other, like, previous improv classes with Michael, maybe they tried to do that.
That's a
and
good
maybe
point.
They're just like, it's not worth it.
Because it truly seems like everyone knows when Michael gets called yes. up for a scene, everyone else's hands go down.
Yes.
Nobody wants to be involved with him at all.
Oh, it's so bad. But yeah, that's mine for this one, because this is the first improv class we're seeing, and everyone just gives up when Michael pulls out a fake gun.
Yeah, whatever.
So.
Yeah, whatever happened to the yes and? I like that. That's a good coal walk.
All right, let's hear yours.
My coal walk is that there are zero, no Neil vegetarian dishes at the barbecue.
My vegetarian queen over here.
Yes. So Angela, who I think also is vegetarian.
I think so.
Goes up to Jim at the barbecue, at the grill.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim's like, Angela, you having fun? Like... And Angela's like, oh, I got sap on me, and rubs her clogs against the floor. So that's how we see her shoes in that moment.
Sap on me.
Yeah. So she's a complainer, as yeah. we know. Mm-hmm. And Jim says, okay, like, you know, hot dog, burger, chicken, what do you want? And she goes, I'm a vegetarian. And he says, there is soda inside. What kind of person?
Soda.
Has a barbecue, like, not even like chips. Like, give me some fruit, give me some salad.
Nothing.
Like, tofu hot dog.
It's it's meat or soda for you.
It's meat or soda. Like, so that was a little appalling for me. I understand for some people that might feel high maintenance. And at the time, it also might not have been as common
to like, provide yeah,
meat
options
alternatives
for, yeah,
or
yeah,
different
yeah,
things.
For sure.
But I was like, bro, like, put out a bowl of tortilla chips.
Something.
Like, something.
Which, like... Stanley was eating a pretzel stick later on, but I don't know, maybe he brought those for himself.
That's
or
true.
But even then, if it was just pretzel sticks, yeah, like,
yeah, or just grill some veggies or something. You
do
know?
Like a veggie skewer, that would
that's
be
what
great
I'm saying. Put a big ass eggplant or potato or mushroom on there.
Portobello.
Like, I'm not picky. I just don't want to eat the dead
literally,
animals you're cooking.
Literally, poor Angela. I do feel for Angela in that situation.
So that's
sure.
my coal walk. Is Jim?
That's a good one.
Jim did a good job hosting, but I was a little appalled at the no vegetarian dishes.
Yeah, yep. I get it. I mean, that was like 20 years ago at this point, also. So I feel like you're right where it wasn't as prevalent to consider that.
Right.
For sure.
Right.
That's a good one.
Thanks.
Okay, it's time to award some Dundies and close out this episode. Do you want to share your Dundie with us first?
I give this episode the Baby Ruth Dundie.
Mm, okay, expand on that for us.
I love a Baby Ruth.
They're so good.
Yeah? I know
so
they're kind of like an older, like weird candy,
yes,
but
they're
the
classic.
Peanuts and the caramel, it's good. Sometimes
the
I watch
chocolate.
This episode and I'm like,
I want a Baby Ruth.
I need to go get a full-size Baby Ruth and eat this along with Dwight.
They're so good.
Also, I thought it was interesting that Angela got this candy
mm-hmm.
for him. Like, mm-hmm. that felt like, I don't know, I felt like that was a little bit of a tell, right?
Yeah.
Like, they don't even talk at work,
no.
right? They're pretty like in separate apartments.
Yes.
Angela's kind of judgmental. Dwight's a freaking weirdo. Like, their interactions are so limited.
Yeah.
And so I guess you can assume like Dwight got himself a Baby Ruth, but I just felt like that
the
was
two.
Yeah.
And then to see, I don't know if we saw her eating hers, but to see Dwight eating it and she got two, you know,
mm-hmm.
like you can easily piece that together.
Well, we could.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Pam could.
Yeah.
A lot of people couldn't, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this one gets the Baby Ruth Dundee for me because it's kind of cute. And
it
also,
is.
Like, you're like, but is it? But is it real? Like,
yeah.
is it real? And then it just confirms it at the end of the episode, which I like.
Well, and I also like that Dwight and Angela are more of a slow burn
yes.
from our perspective
yes.
because, like, Jim and Pam are so outwardly
obviously
sparking and like sickening, and she's still engaged at this point, so that's just like a whole thing. But Dwight and Angela, we find out bits and pieces at a time,
and you wouldn't put them together, so it's complicated, but you also want to know more. And this episode for me, I'm like, that's the undertone. I mean, obviously there's a lot of other stuff going on with the email surveillance and this and that, but I love that this one just confirms that slow burn, like you said.
Well, in the same vein,
tell me,
my Dundee is gonna be the Birkenstock lovers Dundee.
The Birkenstock lovers, the star-crossed lovers.
Yes. So this one also is about Dwight and Angela banging in the playhouse.
They are playing in the playhouse.
They are. And it's just interesting because, like, because they have been so secretive this time, or they have been so secretive up until now, like, you're so guarded and stuff at the office and careful about the way you move around the same space with each other, but you're literally having sex in the backyard of, like, your all of your coworkers are there.
Your boss.
And your boss is there. So it's, like, it's such a strange, like, conundrum of, like, secrecy, privacy, very, like, demure, and then just very outrageous and, like, we're banging in the backyard. Like, that blows the kiss in Chili's out of the water.
It does. You know what I'm saying? Puts it all in perspective.
Yes.
I do think that's part of the good part of Angela and Dwight, because it's a, like, contrast comparison to Pam and Jim. Like, not that one's better or whatever, but Pam and Jim are these, like, easily digestible, even though they're complicated in some ways, they're easily digestible, like, center stage characters, likable. And Angela and Dwight are not. Really. But their relationship, you're like, oh, like,
that's happening,
that's fun, like, good for them. Right. And Pam and Jim, it's, you're kind of feeling that, kind of not, there's some weird things in the way.
Also, it feels wrong to want to root for Jim and Pam at this point, because she's still freaking engaged, and even though Roy is a dick, you kind of feel for him in some way. It's like your fiance is, like, emotionally, if not sometimes physically, cheating on you right above, a floor above you.
One, like, floor up.
So it's just,
and you're kind of waiting for Jim to get his heart broken. I mean, there's, you're right, there's a lot of tension there as well. But then Dwight and Angela feels uncomplicated. So, like you said, you can root for them. Even if you're like, oh, they're both kind of weird characters. You're like, oh, get it. Like, let's go.
I know. Wearing their Birkenstocks and clogs together. And it just fits. And I love that. So that's why they get the Birkenstock lovers Dundee from me.
That's a great one. Well, I think that wraps up this episode.
I agree. That was another great one. The next one we'll cover is episode 10 of season 2, Christmas Party.
Yeah, we're getting into the holiday season, folks.
So that'll be interesting. You'll want to stay tuned for that. Any updates we have? We are throwing around ideas for merch for our adventure to the reunion in a few months. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Let us know if you're going to be there.
Otherwise, same old, same old. Reach out to us. Any questions? If you want to be a guest, you know how to reach us by now, I think. but we'll catch you next time.
We'll see you on Instagram.
I can't show you right now, but I'm I'm wearing Birkenstocks. With the socks.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm gonna cry. Okay.